Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 5th, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our featured guest this evening is Annika Korman, otherwise known as author Jeanna Dut. We had the pleasure of meeting Annika when we were in France last May, and we're delighted to have her return to our show to talk about her spellbinding book, White Lie. It's a thrilling story based on facts and research she's uncovered concerning the secret quest of the Knights Templar, the enigma of Rennes Le Chateau, and the adventures of relic hunter Otto Rahn, who many believe was the inspiration for the Indiana Jones movies. Annika lives in France, so her interview has been pre-recorded. She'll be talking about her upcoming U.S. tour and giving a behind-the-scenes look at how the book came to be written. Her websites are jeannadut.com, and that's spelled JeannaDaout.com, and panoccitania.com, which is spelled Panoccitania.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing emails from our listeners around the world. We'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments, but due to the time difference, Annika can't be here with us live. The number to dial is 917-889-8292, and remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. We invite you to click the follow button on our Blog Talk show page so you'll know about our upcoming shows, and it also will help to promote our work and our guests. And if you're new to our show, our main website is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge, and the entire site has been coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose, Chris, Anastasia, and Tammy for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. Please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. And Arielle, I talked to Joseph today. Several emails have come in saying, what's happened to Joseph? He used to be on the radio asking questions and comments. And so I finally emailed him. And he's been really under the weather. So I thought if you would conduct a healing, an emerald ray healing for Joseph before we start, I think that he would really appreciate that.
Okay.
He is in Pagosa Springs, Colorado.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let's do that.
Okay, okay. Arielle, go ahead and conduct it.
To Joseph in Pagosa Springs, Colorado, if I would get all of you to just focus a green emerald ray with healing intent to Joseph in Pagosa Springs. We'll just have about 10 seconds of silence here while we all concentrate and focus. Okay, thank you so much, everyone, and I know Joseph appreciates it.
Okay, Anastasia, I sent you a really hot email, so I'm anxious to hear you share it with our audience.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up later in our news broadcast. That was fascinating stuff, and we'll get to that. We're going to start tonight by, of course, my usual springboard is discussion of the sun. And we are having right now a decreasing chance of solar flares. Sunspot AR1667 is now decaying, and this has prompted NOAA forecasters to lower the odds of an M-class flare. However, we had the most amazing thing happen on Saturday. It was very unexpected. The solar activity forecast called for quiet. In other words, they didn't think anything was happening. And if you remember a week or two ago, I mentioned to you that the sun was really had really gone very, very silent, very quiet, nothing much happening. But what did happen that surprised everybody, but there was a huge, loud, enormous interference with shortwave radio broadcasting that came quite unexpectedly. It was created by strong solar radio emissions that included one super strong type 3 burst, which is really big, and it drowned out shortwave voice transmission on the planet. And again, that was Sunspot AR1667. We had talked about that for quite a while now, but it unleashed a 2.9-class solar flare, which isn't all that big. But just the type of emission that it was blinked out all of the radio, shortwave radio transmissions, or many of them, across the planet. And that's caused by electrons that are accelerated to high energies when the solar flares occur. And as the electrons come outward from the sun, they make these plasma oscillations in the radio waves around the sun's atmosphere, which bounces off the Earth's radio waves atmosphere. So anyway, that's a pretty elementary description, but essentially that's what happens. So there were big shortwave blackouts, so to speak, on Saturday, and nobody saw that coming. In fact, they forecast it would be quiet, and it was just the opposite. Anyway, so any of you that are shortwave radio operators, maybe you noted that and had some experience with that. And there is a coronal hole developing in the sun, and they call it VAST. It's in the sun's atmosphere, and it's opened up in the sun's northern hemisphere. It's spewing a stream of solar wind into space, and that is going on right now. They say it's huge, and it is flowing out right now and should reach our orbit here in the next couple of days, and it probably will increase auroras later on this week. So that's what's going on in the sun. And more loud boom news across the country. I want to bring up one that happened in Springfield, Missouri here just a couple days ago. Everybody's wondering what in the world was that sound, and this news piece came from KSPR.com, the local news station there around Springfield. And people have called in and wanted to know what that explosion was that happened between, I don't know, 6 and 8 Saturday night, something like that. And they received reports from all around, from Mount Vernon and Ozark and Aurora and Reed Spring, Missouri, and they don't know what caused the blast. They don't know what caused the sound. They know it's not an earthquake, and they say that the last earthquake recorded anywhere near the Ozarks was more than 12 years ago anyway, near Oklahoma City. So we think that that's probably an overhead air burst from a meteor or cometary atmospheric explosion. So it is happening all over the world in increasing frequency. And, in fact, I had a call this afternoon by somebody who reported to me that they had seen one in Kentucky 2 weeks ago, and I hadn't picked any of that up on my own radar looking for these stories, but they claimed that at around 2 in the morning in the back roads of Kentucky, they saw, and this is, by the way, west central Kentucky, they reported seeing a fireball that started out as green, glowed purple, and then went into a brilliant flash of light as it descended over the horizon. So that's a Kentucky sighting of a fireball, and they're just happening everywhere. And speaking of that, they're happening in some unusual places, which I will get to in a minute, but one recently flashed across the night sky in Lincolnshire, England. And they said that it was a green fireball flashing across the sky that occurred on, actually it was on Thursday last, and they were writing about it all over Twitter. So that was happening in England. In fact, it was seen in other places in England as well, other cities. And then one was reported in Wales on Wednesday, the 30th of January. That was a week past for us. Anyway, they said that this was a huge bright light going from south to north, And again, most people see them as green. This one had a red tail. And so there again, we've got fireballs in England and in Wales. And there was a meteor over Japan recently. And, you know, I don't hear much about Japanese sightings, but lunar meteorite hunters.blogspot.com reported this. And so they've been seeing meteors over Japan. It's happening everywhere. Very interesting stuff going on. And we want to talk a little bit about what's going on across the planet right now with Earth changes and what the Mother Earth is telling us, what's happening. And there is a super volcano in Italy that's got people really worried. It's not actually erupting per se, but it's west of Naples. And it's making people nervous because the ground has been rising by 3 centimeters a month. And they're concerned that there's a magma chamber under there. Presumably, they think it's connected to the same one that was under Mount Vesuvius, which is east of Naples. And they think that this an increasing possibility of a danger of an eruption. And there's a lot of volcanic activity going on across the planet, which we'll get to in a little bit. But that's just a new development occurring in Italy. And also, maybe all of you have been aware as you go to the grocery store that food prices are on the rise. And I'm bringing this up tonight because this does have ramifications across the planet, according to predictions, droughts, and things that have happened with the weather. And now, at this present time, they say that U.S. food prices are rising sharply. They were up 9% in December and up by 15% in January. And so they are saying that they're going to continue to rise the prices for lettuce and meat and corn and all other dairy products and things like that are going to continue to rise, and they're attributing that to the drought and the difficult weather that we had this last year in 2012. Well, it's not just happening in the United States. In Argentina, the government has actually taken a stand to freeze supermarket prices to try to break their inflation spiral. And they say that in Argentina, their food prices are skyrocketing. And so they've applied a price freeze that applies to every product in all of the nation's largest supermarket, including Walmart in Argentina. And they're just trying to keep it down so that people can, I think they're really trying to keep people calm, because they had been having looting in Argentina in grocery stores. People are hard up, and they're hoping that this action to freeze prices will calm everything down. Also, in Africa, in Kenya, food prices are on the rise. Now, you know, this really affects the poor population of the planet. The wealthy don't need to worry. They go on and continue to buy what they need at no sacrifice. But when you get into areas of the world where people have marginal incomes, price increases for food just causes tremendous hardship. And this is what's happening in Kenya. Other prices in Kenya are going up as well. But people there are just having an amazing struggle. And unfortunately, this just hurts the poor among the planet the most. Also, they have really had trouble with inflation in food in Turkey, the country of Turkey. Their price index rose from 1.65% to 7.31%. So that's a huge increase. This is just, you know, we've just passed 1 month in this year. So all across the world now, they predicted this at the conclusion of last year's growing season, that this was going to happen. And we're already early into 2013, and we're seeing this all across the planet. So we need to hold the point for those that are going to be experiencing a lot of difficulty from this as our planet begins to, well, let's just say as things change and shift on the planet. Now, we want to talk a little bit about our earthquakes tonight. Some interesting places earthquakes have been occurring. I never really thought about Austria being hit by earthquakes, but they have reported on an internet website called the Extinction Protocol that Austria was hit by a 4.2 magnitude earthquake on Saturday. That's very unusual. They say it was really strongly felt, and it was in the mountain range that bordered Slovenia. And so they say also that in Slovenia, about 2 months ago, there was an earthquake at 4.3 on the Richter scale. So that region is experiencing some shaking. and at least 10 people were injured as a 6.9 magnitude earthquake again hit northern Japan. And this occurred on Sunday. Now, that's a pretty big plant, listen to me, that's a pretty big quake, but two nuclear power plants are in the affected area. They did not report damage to those plants, but sometimes word doesn't get out. So they're still checking on that. I guess I haven't had any updates about if it did damage the nuclear plants, but certainly that's enough to cause some concern. So there was 8 major earthquakes in the last 5 days across the planet. There was an earthquake of 6.7 that struck off the coast of the Solomon Islands, Santa Cruz in the Pacific Ocean. And that quake, by the way, was later downgraded by the USGS to a 6.3, which is a considerable downgrade. But there was also a quake that was, of course, the quake in Japan happened at that time, 6.9. And there's just been a cluster of quakes all over the planet. And that began with a 6.2 event in eastern Kazakhstan at the end of January, and it followed a full moon on January 27th. A lot of times these things occur after full moons or around full moons. But we really need to pay attention because there has been a lot of global earthquake activity and a swarm occurring in the last couple of weeks. And they have decided now that they probably have underestimated their ability to predict earthquakes or to predict superquakes. And they are saying that they need to reevaluate their prediction protocols. You see, the 3 major earthquakes that happened across the planet in the most recent times, one in Japan in 2011, in Sumatra and in Chile, these major quakes that have occurred within the last 40 years altogether, all of a magnitude of 9 point or greater, they're now saying that those earthquakes should have never happened. They didn't expect them to happen. And so now there is a plan underway to try to modify their prediction techniques because they think that now they're looking in the wrong places and maybe they haven't been figuring this out as they should. So that's probably a good thing because they're working on their predictive capacities. And there's a seismologist out there who is warning now of a megathrust earthquake for New Zealand. Now, New Zealand and Australia have had just a heck of a time with their climate and with a lot of things happening down there. But now they're saying that Hawke's Bay in New Zealand is a deep water trench that could be the site of a potential megathrust earthquake that would be very similar to the Japanese earthquake of 2011. So there is some concern about that, and they are really watching the Pacific Rim, the Rim of Fire, and other plates across the planet where the subduction zones are showing signs of stress. And so there's a lot going on out there with that. Researchers and scientists are really watching the planet because she's rattling and rolling a lot. And this is really interesting. I have friends that live up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. But in just 1 month, more than 40 huge sinkholes opened up in Harrisburg, and that's Pennsylvania's capital. And the city doesn't have the money to fix them. They have 41 massive sinkholes as wide as 50 feet, and they say it could cost them about $50 million to permanently fix the holes, but they say that they can't afford it. Now, that is 1 month, 40 sinkholes opening up in one city. And remember, we've talked about those sinkholes, too, over a period of time, and how they're opening up all over the country. Lavendar, do you have any input onto what you think this might be causing this? I thought about fracking, maybe plates underneath. Maybe it has to do with the earthquake faults. You have any ideas about that? Have you been following that at all?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with fracking.
That was kind of my opinion too. I guess they're doing an awful lot of that. But if you live in a sinkhole area, you'll know that there's real cause for concern about it. I've lived in an area with a sinkhole, and that's pretty scary and pretty weird, and it's happening all over the country. So, you know, any activists out there that are interested in planetary preservation, it might be time to take a look at what can be done about fracking. It is really a very detrimental, very damaging process to the planet. Well, now on to the wonderful story that Lavendar sent me. It's really fascinating. It's about some really weird, beautiful, mysterious purple spheres that were found in the desert around Tucson. Now, I wish you could see this photograph of these things because they're absolutely beautiful. They look jelly-like, kind of like frog eggs. Of course, lavender would like them because they're purple. And anybody that likes purple is going to like them. But they're sort of semi-transparent. It didn't really give the size. And as I was looking at the photos that I picked off the Internet, it's hard to say, but they look like they might be the size of... Well, what did you think, Lavendar? Did you see the photos?
Yeah, I saw the photos, and I don't have a clue. I've never seen anything quite like it.
From a camera angle, at first I thought it kind of looked like frog eggs, but then when you look the way the camera takes a picture at one angle, it looks like it might be ping pong balls. So I really can't say how large they are. But anyway, people, what it's about is that someone was walking in the desert near Tucson, just taking a desert stroll, taking photographs, having a nice time, just enjoying the desert, and came across this huge pool of thousands of tiny, it says tiny here, Lavendar, so they've got to be little, tiny purple spheres that appeared right in the middle of the desert, away from everything else, just out on their own. And they say that they're watery. They glitter in the dark. I watched the video, and it showed them poking them with sticks. And it was amazing. It looked sort of like I was just very jellified. Nobody knows what they are. They were completely isolated from the rest of the desert terrain. They contacted zoologists. They contacted botanists. Nobody knows what they are. And this story was recovered by KGUN9. Out of Tucson, I guess it was Tucson, and the news station doesn't even know what it is. So nobody knows. They just say they're these gooey marbles that ooze out a water substance when you squish them. Some people think they're extraterrestrial in origin, but they haven't identified exactly what they are and why they're there or who put them there. Pretty interesting story.
So are they coming up out of the ground? Did they say that?
You know, as usual, when something could be really important and when they have all the resources in the world to test things, to investigate, it's a very sketchy story. It's very poor reporting. This really should have been probed. They should have tested these things. There was no mention of them coming up out of the ground. This is one of those things that, you know, again, very poor reporting. And that makes me think that there may be something to it. You know, if they could run this to ground and they could do it very easily, find out what these things are, that would be their responsibility to the public to tell us. But they're not telling us. So that makes me really wonder. And it's very typical of news today. When we go to get news, as I search on the Internet, I find bits and pieces of stories that I think are great to follow. When I follow the links, I find out that the stories themselves are misleading and you get dead ends. And I've noticed, everybody, maybe you all have found this out as well, those of you who try to stay on top of things going on using the Internet as your alternative news source, that even that, which used to be plentiful up to 6 or 8 months ago, is now getting very, very sketchy. So it's getting harder and harder to find out what's going on across the planet. And that's why it's so important that you wonderful Starseed listeners email me and let me know what's going on in your area. Because happens around you that you may think is not important or somebody else is reporting, not necessarily. So sometimes we just have to keep each other informed. And so I'm putting out a call again for all of you to keep me posted and apprised of anything unusual that happens in your life or in your region. And as far as the purple balls go, I don't know if we're going to hear any more about it or follow up on it. Now, those of you that want to go on the Internet and check this out, you can type in Daily Mail Reporter, or you can type in Tucson Purple Spheres, and that should lead you to the story. Okay, it's in the Daily Mail Reporter out of Arizona. And I'd like for you to look at those photos if you get a chance. They're really amazing, very beautiful. But we don't know what they are. And also, I want to talk to you for a second about the World Economic Forum. And this is one of those cases where I have to confess that when I pulled this article off of the Huffington Post, I got kind of excited. I thought, this is a wonderful story for our Starseed News segment. And it was only in the last little bit, as I do my last minute editing and checking before the show, that when I follow links and do double checks and things like that to make sure I've got my facts straight, that I kind of felt like this article itself may not quite tell the whole story. But I'm nevertheless going to give you a summary of it, and then I'm going to tell you what I can about it. And it's out of the Huffington Post, so let me just start with their headline. And their headline is this: ET discovery could happen within 10 years based on the World Economic Forum. Now, what this is about is that they have been discovering so many Earth-like planets in our modern astronomical science. I mean, they've just come up with planet after planet after planet that apparently, according to this article in the Huffington Post, the World Economic Forum has put it on their agenda as a crucial item coming up for future world concerns and how things ought to be handled. Now, the World Economic Forum is where business leaders around the world and prominent politicians get together to discuss issues or risks that they think they might have to confront in the next 10 years. And so how did ETs become a part of this mix? Well, like I said, you know, because science is finding so many new planets, and apparently their concerns are connected to the international science journal called Nature. And I'm sure maybe a lot of you looked at the Nature magazine. I certainly have. But the Nature magazine, along with the World Economic Forum, along with Nature magazine, they came up with five X factor items. What they're concerned about is unheralded dangers that are going to sneak up on the planet. You know, this is all of their planning ahead and so forth. And one of the issues that they feel is a risk to the planet is the possible social consequences of contact with alien life. Okay. So that is what they're concerned about, and they consider it a global risk. And the reason they consider it a global risk, primarily when they get right down to the bottom of it, is that it would totally alter mankind's philosophical and religious beliefs. They're concerned that they would have to sort of tear it all apart and start over. Okay, but the reason they consider it a risk, according to them, now this is mainstream stuff here, but they say given the pace of space exploration, they say it's increasingly conceivable that we will discover the existence of alien life or other planets that will support human life in no more than 10 years, because we now have evidence that the Earth is not unique, but also there's evidence that life exists elsewhere in the universe. And, you know, it's the NASA's Kepler spacecraft that's kind of responsible for this, because the Kepler spacecraft has been discovering exoplanet after exoplanet after exoplanet. In fact, they say that the Kepler mission to look for planets outside of ours has been operating for only 3 years and has turned up thousands of candidates, including one the size of the Earth. And again, you know, they're just worried about the long-term psychological and physical implications that will accompany the discovery of alien life. Oh, my goodness, let us worry that our entire philosophical paradigm that has taken us to the brink of extinction will be overturned and we could actually evolve. That's something to really be scared of, isn't it?
Yeah.
we don't want the population of planet Earth to wake up. Heaven forbid. What can we do to stop that? Well, actually, there's nothing they can do to stop it. And the fact is that it is a runaway train, and they recognize that they're going to have to do something about that. So you can bet that behind the scenes, the global elite are preparing themselves and their people for such a discovery. And now I want to talk to you for a second about what they consider to be what they call the X factor risk items that might be connected with humanity's result with encountering an extraterrestrial civilization. And they seem to think that these X factor risk items, that's hard to say, you guys, for some reason, are connected to alien presence. And the more you know about UFO contact and the agenda that has been presented to contactees, the more we are familiar with the ultra-terrestrial or extraterrestrial agenda, you will see that many of these themes are threaded throughout this kind of contact. So I'm going to read this list to you here. It's only four things. They're concerned about runaway climate change. Now, the ETs have been talking to contactees a long time about climate change and about Earth changes. So that is something that also the global elite are concerned about. The other thing that is on their little list is significant cognitive enhancement. Well, what does that mean? Significant cognitive enhancement. Cognitive is thinking. They're talking about the ability or the, let's talk about the super abilities of enhancing normal human functioning, whether it be brain power, other physical attributes, things that science is doing on a nanoscale, developing what we would call things connected to transhumanism, making a better human with computer implants, chips, things like that. Also using DNA modification, things like that. They are constantly working on and escalating, I might say, tremendous advancements in sort of part human, part machine, what they're working for. So working on, and this is imminent. I mean, this is coming onto the field. The young people in our audience are going to see this, the sort of development of transhuman capabilities and sort of a new human in that way. They're working on it, and they are on the cutting edge. It's happening as I'm talking. They're also worried about the rogue deployment of geoengineering. Well, now, it's time for everybody to understand that geoengineering is fact. They are influencing the environment. They are influencing the atmosphere, not only with spraying, high aerial spraying, that is considered geoengineering, suspending aluminum and other particles into the atmosphere to deflect solar rays. There is technologies such as HAARP and other technologies. We could go on and on down the list that come into the classification of geoengineering, and they're concerned about its rogue deployment. Although I have to say that in many cases, perhaps our own people would be considered to be using it in a rogue way. So everybody's always worried about somebody else getting a hold of it and using it in a way that is undesirable. That's one of their concerns about the future. And interestingly enough, and lastly, they're considered that the risk item of the future is the cost of living longer. They feel that because of the transhuman enhancements that they're coming up with, and once they feel that they can stabilize the climate, which they're planning on doing scientifically and possibly with ET assistance, that's an implication, that it will cost a lot more to live longer. So what they are doing is projecting a very different world than what we grew up in, sort of an alien place, what we would consider very unfamiliar to the old human ways, and that is something to think about, really where it's headed. And so the global elite are busy trying to sketch out an answer to what they think is coming and how they're going to handle it with the world population. And they know where science is going. They know what they're doing, what they are achieving, and they know precisely very well how they are going to implement this and inject this into society ahead of time. So everything around us that we enjoy today, whether it's computing, lights, modern medical care, whatever, you name it, whatever kind of technology we have, it's all been planned ahead of time. It's all been injected into our society, and it is all a product of social planning, which from my own philosophy and from the practice that I have, a private practice that I do as a clairvoyant, and the shamanic work that we do, I am continually and increasingly encouraging my clients to become far more earth-connected, to try to put down your technology, put down your iPhone, put down your tablets, let your email go, let Facebook go. Don't text. Become less technologically advanced and more humanly advanced, because society is trending now toward the other thing. And it is not a celebration of really what we are, the where we're going. We all think it's cool and we get excited about it and it seems like progress. But really, when we come to understand that being a human is to be divine spirit incarnated, and that taking time to love and to connect, you can't connect with the light. You can't be a person of light unless you can love. And you can't love unless you can be a human. This emotion of love is deeply connected to our humanity, and it is one of the greatest of all strengths. It is something that we were given, and this is something that needs to be developed. And people complain that they're alienated from one another and that people don't have time to connect anymore, and everyone feels isolated. I see this all the time, and it's causing a lot of suffering on all levels. And people are becoming alienated because they are becoming wired more to the impersonal and the virtual world. And the only solution to that is to go back to the earth, to get connected to the divine feminine, the Sophia energies, to be connected to our humanity and to one another. This is how we hold and anchor the light on the planet. And we all need to be careful lest we get carried away with the ideas of progress and what sounds so wonderful and new and exciting. It is, in my opinion, in my clairvoyant estimation, a seduction. And we have to be careful that we hold close to our hearts and hold close to one another, because we are products of this earth. There may be civilizations and entities and planets and throughout the known universe that is largely technological. Maybe that is how they thrive. But in our humanity, we thrive through our love and through our nature and through the love of nature and through the love of one another. And I know many starseed are out there really working on the planet. They're doing a lot of good for her, very conscious of her. Bless you all. This is something that we need to do even more. She's going through her experience that is intrinsic to these changes. She's done it in many, many cycles. We're along for the ride. And we need to join hands and hearts with her and rejoice in where we are, that we are children of this planet, and that we have each other, and that we are connected to divine light. And as these things begin to occur, and as social agendas tend to push us in a certain direction, I'm asking all of you who are connected spiritually to learn to see through and to resist being steered and herded, but to connect to your hearts and connect to the planet and the animals and the sun and the stars and all that is beautiful and everlasting, because this planet has been here for eons, and she is going through, I think, some changes that are difficult in the initial stages. But we're all partners, and we're all in this together. And I do feel we can mitigate these things with our light work and our love and being who we are. And this is why we're here. This is why we came. We came here to make a difference, and everybody listening to this show is a part of that wonderful family of light. And so that's the end of my speech, but I want to thank you for letting me be on tonight. It's been great. I always love to do the news. It's one of my favorite things to do every week. And I look forward to next week, and we'll have some more news for our Starseed News. So I think that's about it for tonight, Ariel.
Thank you so much, Anastasia. I just, there were so many things that I was thinking, yeah, those, especially that list of four things.
Yes.
Wanting to keep the status quo, and I had this feeling about, I started thinking about Atlantis, and that's how a lot of us are back now, a lot of Atlanteans are back now, and that it is our task to make sure that balance between spirit and science is maintained, because we're kind of on the same path that Atlantis was, not to that degree yet, so there's time to turn it around. But
Ariel, that you're right. That's so important. It was on my mind as well. And you know, I have to say this. You know, all of our starseed are at different levels economically. Depending on your economic placement in this social strata, you're going to be kind of limited what you can do. Many people have to, I mean, they can't get active, they can't do much except in their own personal lives, which is probably everything. But I'm talking about when you say, no more Atlantis, and we can't let that happen. Let's think for a second about what that means. Everybody can do something. But there are those who listen and those who are involved who have a little bit more economic freedom, a little bit more perhaps influence in the world stage. And for those of you that have that capacity, that have that influence to whatever measure, it's really time to be heard. It's time for people to speak up and to get involved and a little bit proactive in what's happening. It's not enough to just listen to it. It's really... Ariel, when you say that we're charged with not letting it happen, each one of us in one way, shape, or form has a responsibility to see that we're kind of steered back in the right direction, because it is in motion, and it's not just a little ways down that sliding scale. We are a lot further along toward Atlantis than we might like to think. So it really is time to wake up. I mean, you know, it is time. It is time. the clock's ticking, and so for all of us that may have, you know, some restriction as to what we can do on a social scale, there's always things we can do on a personal scale.
And an energetic level.
That's exactly right. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. Absolutely. And let's not forget to love the little animals. You know, I was out and about today, and I'll be darned if there wasn't a bee in my car. A honeybee. A honeybee. Here, it's what's today, the 5th of February? Is that right?
Uh-huh.
And it was just so beautiful. But, you know, when I looked at that bee, I so connected with him. I just loved that bee. I felt the love, the vibration, the feeling of respect and admiration and awe. And his was so beautiful in his color, and he was so healthy and vibrant. And bees, as you all know, are endangered right now. But it was beautiful to see this little bee. I let him out the window. It was a little warm here today. But, yeah, it's odd to see a bee in the first part of February. Yes. We all see indicators
Lost.
That, yeah, we all see indicators that the climate and things are changing. But something simple as just, you know, tell that little bee how much you love it. I know there's people out there listening that's going, man, this woman has lost it. But I don't care what those people say. There are those listening to us that know what we're talking about. And it is about appreciation. And every act of love causes a shift on a subtle level. So
maybe
when
it was
love...
the good news B.
What's that?
Maybe it was the good news B.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yeah, and, you know, in shamanism we learned that anytime an animal or a being or creature of nature crosses your path, it has a message for you. And so, yes, every encounter you have... whether it's with a bluebird or a dragonfly or a squirrel or whatever. Nature talks to us. She's conscious. It's another form of spirituality that simply speaks to us in terms of nature. And so, yeah, you're right, Lavendar. I mean, that was a personal thing for me to see the bee today. But each one of you out there have connections. You all have animal guides. You all have teachers and loving guides to help you that are Earth-connected, not just galactically connected. Sometimes we can get so high in our upper chakras that we forget to connect to the planet. And that has got to keep us in balance. We are first and foremost, even if we're starseed, our bodies are made of the stuff of this planet. And this needs to be the place that we anchor to and love, because this is where we came to love and to make a difference. This is where we're needed. This is why we're here. So let it be a celebration of our physical lives every day and of the physical life of all beings. Even trees, flowers, plants, water. Water is a wonderful element in the shamanic tradition. It's a great cleanser. You know, people contact me all the time. I'm considered to be, in my private practice and regionally, an energetic expert. I help people clear negative energy, bring positive energy into their lives, clean out things that need to be cleaned out of their aura, bring stability back into their lives. And in emergency situations or where we need a quick remedy, I recommend that people take a salt shower or a salt bath. Now, I know Lavendar has mentioned that before. But water is a woman's balancer and a woman's healer, particularly in the feminine aspect. So water brings great balance and healing into our lives. And in something as when you're feeling out of sorts or you feel energetically off, all you starseed out there, it's a great practice to once a day take a glass of water, spring water if you have it. If you don't, well, whatever water you've got that's clean. But hold it up to the sun and ask that it be blessed and purified and cleansed for your intake during the day. And bless that water and make it sacred. And develop a ritual of drinking your sacred water that's been blessed. Will bring great balance into your life as well as appreciation of the water in your shower and in your bath. And when we know and see that the waters of the planet are deplorably, tragically contaminated now, I mean, we cannot live in houses with electric lights and electric heat and food in the refrigerator that comes from a grocery store forever and feel that we can escape what is occurring to the planet because of the elites who have damaged it, but also because of the apathy of people who have been coaxed, goaded, and otherwise led into a lifestyle that is not connected to the earth. And so everything around us is pushing us to cue that out. And I am pushing people or trying to persuade people to cue that in, to get connected to the earth. And when you do, you're going to experience an explosion of spiritual development, an explosion of spiritual empowerment. And when you think about it, that is one reason that we're being pushed away from our planetary connections and where the earth is being seen as a resource and where people are being seen as what? Human resources. Everything is about resource. No, wrong. Somebody else is defining that for us. Somebody else has created that agenda. That's not the agenda of the Earth's children, and that's not the agenda of the Earth's beings or the Earth herself. And so I think that one of our things that we can do, each one of us, as we work with energy, as Ariel said, is in our opportunities of conversation. Those of you out there that are writers, that are involved in entertainment or productions of any kind, those of you who are healers, pass the word along. Get the message out. It's something that we can all do every single day. And so that's where I think we need to be focusing, and I hope that this has been helpful to all of you with the sacred water exercise and the salt bath treatment. And any of you that are feeling energetically out of balance or you need some help with it, give me a call, and we'll go over some other things that can be done. These are really times that are going to challenge even the strongest of us. And we've got the most beautiful people on the planet that listen to this program. They're the most prepared for the changes that are coming, and they're the most prepared to make the difference. But even the greatest warriors need some strength, help, and support, and sometimes need to have some guidance and some energetic alignment. So that's why I'm here, to serve those of you who have come to make the biggest difference. And it's my privilege to be at your service.
Well, thank you so much, Anastasia.
Thank you so much.
And we have our recorded segment that of the interview that Lavendar did with Annika. And if you have anything else to add before we start that? Okay.
I'm sorry, my mute button was on. I am so. I beg your. Well, you know. Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm ready to get on with the program.
Okay.
Are you, Lavendar?
Ready to go.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hit my mute button, and then if you call me again, give me about 10 minutes to get back to you.
Okay.
Take that long to. Okay.
Okay. So here we have the interview with Lavendar and Annika Foremans, also known as the author Jana Dute.
Starseed Radio Academy is so proud to have Annika Foremans, who wrote the wonderful book called White Lies. She's in France, and we're pre-recording this because of the time difference. So, Annika, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I just tell a lot of people about your book because it was so exciting for me to read, and people have heard me say this before. When I was in England, I started the book when we left London, and I read for 9 hours, and when we landed in Atlanta, I had just finished the last page. I looked out the window and said, oh, this has to be a movie. And I was just absolutely enthralled with it, and I'm anxious to hear what's happened since we last talked to you. I know that you're coming to the United States pretty soon. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about, first, let's put the dates out of when you're going to be here. So people, we'll say it again at the end of this, but at the beginning, let's give the place where people may come and see you while you're here. So if you have your schedule there, go ahead and tell us what your stops are here in America.
Okay. Well, it's a coast-to-coast tour, but it's not completely filled up with all work. It's also to have a lot of fun and meet friends and meet new friends. And for the first time, I'm going to come to America. I've never been to America, and I am actually leaving on the 18th of February to go to L.A. And 18th of February is a very strange date because I just realized last week that that was Otto Rahn's birthday. And, of course, Otto Rahn was a very, very important character in my book who really existed. And I never realized this. So I'll be traveling to L.A. and coming to America for the very first time on Otto's birthday, which is really, really fantastic. So from the 18th on, I will be in L.A. for a couple of days, leaving to go to Las Vegas on the 21st of February. And I will be there for a short week. And on the 23rd of February, I will be on Sandy Sedgbeer's talk show live on television in Las Vegas, which is a big honor. And I will be flying to New York on the 27th. Of February, staying there for a couple of days with a few really, really good friends. I'm also staying in Vegas with a very dear friend, by the way. And I'll be leaving for the Netherlands, actually, on the 4th of March.
Are you doing lectures where people can go and hear you while you're here?
No. This is, for me, it's
oh,
trying,
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's trying to reach out to see if I can find a literary agent. Because it is very, very important for me to get this book done for a movie, to turn it into a movie, to create something really, really beautiful, a mix between art and message and a fast feature movie.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm trying to do this, but I need a literary agent because I've tried to reach out to the studios directly, and this is not done. You cannot do this. And I've only found out after I've done it, that this was not the way to do it. So I need a literary agent, so I'm really, really trying to find one. So that is one of the big reasons why I'm coming to America. Also, I've been invited for the talk show. So that was one of the big reasons why I wanted to come over. And I was going to do a documentary shoot in New York, but the producer who was going to do this documentary with me suddenly has a lot of success with his latest project, so he didn't have time, which is unfortunate, but everything has a reason. So now I'm in New York, and let's see what unfolds.
Okay, good. And you're going to be in Las Vegas, what, a week, did you say?
A short week. I will be in Vegas, yes.
Yeah.
Staying with a very dear friend, and I'm looking forward to that and exploring a little bit of the area as well. I think we're going to hike out to the Red Rock Canyon or something similar.
Well, you know, I would like to tell you, this is on the air, so I'm telling everyone, that just north of Las Vegas is a place called Mount Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lodge, and you go in and you sit down in front of the fireplace. It's a gorgeous place, but I've had a lot of ET experiences there. I had I had a time travel experience there that completely changed my life. So if you want to take a little drive north of Las Vegas to Mount Charleston, to the Mount Charleston Lodge at the top of the mountain, I would suggest you go there. It will just be and they have great food, and they have a great coffee drink, and so I'm just saying to you that might be it, something that you want to explore while you're there. And remember, in Las Vegas, the very highest and the very lowest of souls. This is one gigantic extraterrestrial experimental station.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to tell you that. So let's talk a little bit about your book. Some of our listeners heard your story before, but there's a lot of new listeners that have not heard about your book. So why don't you just start by telling us what's the story based on? I understand that Steven Spielberg, when he did Raiders of the Lost Ark, that possibly Otto was someone that maybe he referred to as Indiana Jones. Is that correct?
Well, it's an assumption made by a couple of people that think that, the Spielberg-Lucas team, when they thought up the Indiana Jones story, that Indiana Jones was based on Otto Rahn. I'm not sure that this is true. The only thing I know is that there are many similarities between the two, because Otto Rahn was a little bit of a relic hunter, and he lived just before the Second World War, and he had commissions done for Himmler and Rosenberg, and he only found out about the whole mess behind it a little bit too late. So there was no way back and no way out, and he was trapped in the... unfortunately had to end his life somewhere in the mountains in 1939. So Otto Rahn's story is a very, very interesting story, actually, because he followed in the footsteps of the Knights Templar and the Grail stories of Wolfram von Eschenbach. And he walked all the way to the castle of Montsegur, and you know that's a big mountain to climb, and he's been up there maybe 100 times because he wanted to do some archaeology there, because he really believed that that was the Grail Mountain. That was the castle of the Grail where the Cathars were having their last stand in 1244. So Otto Rahn is a character to study, and when I found out how important he was in this area, how important he was because he was the one that actually got the message out that the Cathars, the Gnostic Christians that live there in southern France in the 13th century, that these people, they really, really wanted to oppose the power of the church in Rome. Otto Rahn found out that these people were massacred, that this was a Holocaust, and close to 1 million people were killed, and that this was hidden in history, you know, because history is always written by the victors. And, of course, this story was a little bit, you know, it was pushed under the sand, conveniently. So Otto Rahn was very, very touched by discovering this story, and he wrote a book about it called Crusade Against the Grail. And when he published it outside of France, for the first time, the rest of the world could hear the story of the Cathars. So he's a bit of a hero to me. You know, he was the one that for the first time brought out the story of the Cathars, of the Gnostic Christians here who opposed the Roman Catholic Church. And it was more or less a sort of Occitan Golgotha Montsegur Castle.
So let me ask you, so when you read his book, kind of walk us through, like when you folded the book and you finished reading it, what went through your mind? How were you charged up to take this further? What happened to you after you read his story?
Otto Rahn's book was for me the missing link, because I had been researching the history and the mystery of Europe and the Near East and biblical stories and the history and mystery of civilization as a whole. And I had also tried to discover some secrets of the Knights Templar, all the things that were hidden, all the little things that people were not supposed to find out. There are always people like me trying to find out the mysteries of the world and the things that are forbidden. And Otto Rahn was just the missing link. And so when I finished his book, I was like, okay, now I think I may have all the pieces of a very intriguing story. And I'm a tour guide here in Occitania, southern France, in Cathar country. And when you live here, and when you're a tour guide, when you're in the off season, you go off the road and you discover lots of things. And one of my clients said, why don't you write the book? And that is how it all started. I started writing White Lie when I first found out that Otto Rahn was a vital part in the enigmas of the Knights Templar and Rennes Chateau and all the stories of the south of France.
I was so intrigued by the two women that you had in your story. Can you give our listeners a little bit about these two gals that really jumped in the middle of time travel?
Yeah, this is the modern time in the book, because you go through different parts of time. In the modern time, present day, you would have a team of people who would research by means of a time travel device using a wormhole to find out what really happened in the first century. So you follow two women who are actually doctors, professors, trying to find out what happened in the first century. One of them could speak Greek, so she could communicate with people there. And the other one took notes, and she was more interested in other things. So the both together were very, very important. And they sort of worked their way into the community around Jesus at that time. So you get a sort of, in the book, in the story, you get a sort of firsthand diary, because Danielle, the main player in the book, she wrote a diary. Every single day they spent there, she wrote in her diary. So she actually discovered the truth around the first century and how things were different, and how things were not the same thing as we know now today. And I've been able to do this because I researched a lot of things around the first century, so I could do this in this story. And Danielle and Gabby, the two main players, they both travel back in time, discover the truth behind Jesus, and then they come back to the present. And then they find out that there was another person in the laboratory called Sardis, Cardinal Sardis, and he was from the Vatican, and he was supposed to keep an eye on everything, because when he would find out that they came back with information that would be damaging to the church, he would have to make sure that that information would be destroyed. So Cardinal Sardis is like the person that is a little bit of the enemy, but at the end of the book, he's not so much the enemy anymore. So this book is also about conduct and choice, and that we, you know, not everybody that is the bad person in the book is always 100% bad. People have a story to themselves, and Cardinal Sardis has this obsession. So I'm trying to go into human conduct as well as just a fast-moving story. This is not just a thriller book. This goes really, really deep into human nature.
Have you had any backlash from the Catholic Church because of the book that you've written?
On the contrary.
Really?
This is really strange. There are more and more people who belong to the church in some way, the Protestant, Catholic, but they're very, very much church people, and they were intrigued by the way I described Jesus. I call him Oshu because that is an Aramaic name of Jesus, and I think a lot of people around him spoke Aramaic, so I chose Oshu as the name for Jesus. And I tried to put him down as a human being, but a very, very special human being. So I keep him in a certain respect, because I believe that he was an incredible avatar. So I wrote down what I felt, what I saw, what I could, you know, feel in my soul, and I wrote down exactly the person that I think he was. And for some reason, this was picked up by people from the church, and they loved it.
Wow.
Yes, that's what I said.
Yeah, that's really, really good news. Now, do you still do tours when people come over there to France to the Rennes Le Chateau area? Do you still do tours yourself?
Absolutely. I even have a tour based on the book. So
okay.
All the places in the book that are here will be, you know, we'll go to the places and we'll I can explain a little bit about these places, and we can see the pregnant Mary Magdalene on the wall in Alet Leban. Those things are very, very important. So I'm trying to show that this is not make-believe, this is not sucked out of my thumb, this is really here, all those things that I described.
So on your website, do you have the tour times? Can people contact you to come on your tours?
Absolutely.
Okay, why don't you give your website where people can go and look at your website? Go ahead and give your address.
Okay, well, the website that I have the complete tour on is panoccitania.com.
You're going to have to spell that.
Well, pan is P-A-N, and Occitania is Occitania, of course, O-C-C-I-T-A-N-I-A, panoccitania.com. And then you have a forward slash, and then white lie, and then .html.
Okay.
And that is the page on which the tour is. And it's also very, very easy to Google, because if you Google white lie and Jeanne, which is my nom de plume, I'll tell you a little bit about my nom de plume later on, then you will come to all kinds of website pages, and a trailer, and links, and the press page, and there are so many things you can find. Only just Google white lie and Jeanne. And Jeanne is J-E-A-N-N-E. And that is the easiest way, I think, because then you will discover all the sites. I've so many websites. I've jeannedoute.com. Then you have the white lie press page .blogspot.com. So there are so many websites that I'm on, and lots of things to explain. The tour White Lie 2013 is going to happen on the 29th of September. It's for 1 week, and it's an amazing trip. And I've managed to stay under the 1,000 euro, but it's almost full board. It has all the excursions included. So it's quite a big tour, and you'll go to all those special places that you couldn't possibly go when you would be on your own, because you need somebody to open up a church. You need somebody to give access to a certain place, and that is not always possible when you're on your own.
Right. Now, I know that the last time we talked that you were going on a little trip back into some caves or something, that something had just been discovered, that you and two or three different people, I think, were going to research something that hadn't been researched before. Do you have any information about that?
I don't really remember. I know I've been to the caves in the spring of last year, and this was an amazing place to go to, because I was literally and the footprints and belly prints of Otto Rahn, because some parts were really, really difficult to climb to. You have to be on your belly and crawl through. But that was really beautiful. And you would be in all those caves that people would flee to, also in the Khazar Crusade period, when all those people fled to the caves and tried to hide out there. And they would keep their stories and information, and they would also keep, for example, the original Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, and they would probably sing it there as well to keep it alive, you know, because you have to keep a thing like that alive because it's so valuable, and all those books were burned, so you have to keep it orally as well.
Right. There's a place, I can't remember the name of the town, where a lot of people came because they thought it was the end of the world. What was the name of that town? It's not too far from you.
Yeah, Bucuraș.
Yes.
Bucuraș.
Tell us something about. Tell us something interesting that happened or didn't happen on December 21st.
First of all, it was an amazing day. It was such an amazing day. I don't know what happened, because the 20th, I felt really, really terrible, and the 22nd, I felt really, really terrible. But 21st, I felt awesome. It was so stupid. I didn't really realize it. Of course, a lot of people came to the brush. A lot of people came to the mountain. And there was a lot of press there, maybe more press than people, which was hilarious, I think hundreds. But everybody was waiting and waiting and waiting for something to happen. But of course, it goes on a different level. This all happens on a different level. So people were using their five senses, and they should have used their sixth. I think I've been spending the day using my sixth, which was extraordinary. I've had somebody explain to me that the Bogoraj and the area around the Bogoraj has a lot of uranium, and there is a slight, how do you call it, vibration that comes off of it, that makes it easier for you to meditate or to explore different dimensions. And this is what happens on a moment like that when you have all the planets aligned. Then something happens on certain places in the world. And Bogoraj was one of those places, and I could feel it. And believe me, I'm very, very dark. I'm very sober. And I could feel it, and I couldn't believe what I was meditating to. This was beyond anything I've ever done, ever seen. And it was very quickly, and it was very short, but it was really, really deep into a very, very big center of the universe, and you just don't exist anymore. You just lose your individuality completely.
Wow.
So that an amazing, yeah, that was amazing. I think if I were in Holland, on the 21st of December, I wouldn't have felt it. Maybe not as much, but maybe because we were so close to the mountain, because we live so close to the mountain here, that something happened. Something must have happened, because I could feel it, and the meditation was extraordinary.
Well, I know that titanium activates a certain part of your brain for the portals of time. And I hadn't heard about uranium, but that makes sense. That makes sense that sometimes a mineral will activate and make those little brain crystals jump up and down to where they're able to access different doorways. That makes sense.
Absolutely. It's like a sort of radioactive substance,
yeah,
that allows your brain to temporarily just shut up,
yeah.
Because
yeah,
your brain needs to shut up. That is the big, big problem with people these days. I mean, you have to do so much, so your brain is constantly working. And when you need to meditate, whoa, that is difficult, because you have to shut it off. And I think having this uranium in the mountain over there, and having the planets align, made it a little bit easier for your brain to just, you know, stop.
Well, what I was told is that our brains expanded, and that instead of having 10% brain power, that we kind of jumped to 15 or 20 during,
yeah,
that period of time. And this was a consciousness. It was about consciousness, and it was about lifting up out of 3D, going into more 4, 5, and 6D.
Yes,
And so I think different people experienced it in different ways.
Absolutely.
But the one thing that I did start seeing that started happening after this period of time, I saw a lot of people go instantly into depression. And then I saw another group go into anger. And then there was the finger pointing, and then the judgments. It's almost like it stirred up a whole nother level of chaos on the planet. And then a whole bunch of wars started breaking out. And it was like, oh my goodness. But maybe all that has to happen to burn it off before we can really go into a higher consciousness.
Well, if you have a computer and you put a new program on, then sometimes you have to shut the computer off and restart it again.
Yeah.
So I think we need to turn ourselves off a little bit, and then turn ourselves on again, to be able to reboot with all that new energy and information.
That's really quite, you know, our brains are like computers. They really are. I mean, there's certain areas of the brain that files your soul records, and then all the different time zones in an astrological chart. There's 12 time zones in your computer, in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever's, it's how you function in all 12 aspects of your life on a daily basis. And then there's some days when you get up and you have a lot of energy and go forward and have a great day. And it will match sometimes looking at your astrological chart just to see what kind of transits were happening, say, in your third house of communication, for instance. It does give you the trigger of how to track yourself. But it's you're right. The brain is like a computer, and sometimes you do have to shut it off and reboot. Yeah. So tell us more, a little bit more about what you have found from other readers that have written to you. What is it that they say to you after they read your book?
Well, the first thing that I get to me is, boy, you've done your homework, which I'm really, really glad to hear because you're just one person, so you can always make mistakes and you can always, you know, misjudge something or misunderstand something. You're just one person. But it's nice to hear time and time again that that people enjoy researching my research and then finding out that a lot of things are actually just historical facts. So that is a very, very good thing to hear from other authors, and to hear that people, you know, actually know what I'm talking about. That this is not just, like I said before, sucked out of my thumb. It's really, really, if you research all the little historical things that I've put throughout my book, it will put you on a new road of information that you may have perhaps overlooked. I do that all the time. I overlook things all the time, and then suddenly I read something somewhere and I think, hey, that's interesting. So I look it up and I go on my own research path thanks to finding that piece of information. So I hope to contribute a little bit to people's path by giving a little bit of, you know, to sow a few seeds for new research and find out that maybe there's much, much more to discover even.
Right. So tell me a little bit about how people respond to the storyline of time travel. Is that part of, do people get really excited about reading about time travel?
The one thing that I've heard from, I think, two people was that they love that I've used the wormhole instead of something else. Because the wormhole theory is closest to what they're trying to do at the moment. To try to use the power of forming a wormhole, and they had three problems trying to use it for time travel, and that is that one of those things are, for example, that you have echoes, so you get deformations. Well, the professor in my book, of course, tackled all that, so he had those three problems tackled, so he was able to form a wormhole into the past. So I've heard from somebody, he's somebody, he doesn't want to be mentioned, but he's somebody who works, I think it was astrophysics, and he thought that I was really, really close to what they were trying to aim for. What they're trying to do right now is to use the wormhole theory as a time travel device. So that is nice to hear. I haven't had any criticism about time machines or whatever, and I was so scared that I would get, you know, people laughing their hands off like, what, not another time machine. But I think I got away with it, but it was a nice way to explore how to travel back in time, to use the theory that people are actually working on right now, and to be able to go back in time, because that is so necessary. And besides, I needed to get Otto Round back to the present, of course. I needed somebody to get him before he kill himself and get him back to the present.
Right. Well, not only did you nail it, I mean, it's that was probably the one ingredient that just kept me on the edge of my seat was the time travel episodes throughout the book. So I am just so very, very pleased that you're coming to America, and I hope that you're going to have a wonderful stay here. And if while you're here, if you feel like it, you can come and say hello to our radio audience. We're on every Tuesday at 7 Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. So maybe while you're over here, that you'll, on a Tuesday, maybe you can call in, because people will have heard this recording, and maybe they'll want to talk to you and ask you some questions. So we do invite you to do that. So
okay.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And is there any last things that you'd like to say to our audience?
Yes. I have a page on the International Movie Database that you may like to check out. It is on my nom de plume. So I forgot to say why I've used my nom de plume. It's my ancestral name, Jeanne Daut. That is the name under which I've written my book. And I've done it to honor my ancestors. And there is a biography on the International Movie Database site, imdb.com, which is interesting because it will explain a little bit more about me and about why I wrote the book and why I used my nom de plume, Jeanne Daut. So if you would go to imdb.com and you would Google Jeanne Daut, then you would probably go to the page. It's also on jeannedaut.com and on whitelightpresspage.blogspot.com. So you will, in either way, you will be able to access that page. And I have a new 2013 Amazon edition. It's also out on ebook for Kindle, Nook, Sony, and Kobo.
Oh, that's great.
And I've created a media company called PanOccitaniaMedia.com, and I've created it to help promote Occitania and its fascinating culture in the international media, like internet, TV, and film. And we help crews to organize ground arrangements like accommodation, transportation, meals, and we can also assist with planning like access, film, locations, direction, producing, and presenting.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for the time that you've taken to be with us today. And we hope you have a great time here in America. And we hope that you call in and talk to us while you're here.
Thank you for having me.
So now back to you, Ariel.
Well, Annika, we want to thank you so much for your presence here on our show tonight, even though it was once removed. And certainly, if you call in on a Tuesday when you are in the States, we'd love to have you come back. So, Lavendar?
Yes, I really enjoyed talking to her, and I just I can't express enough how the book has really changed my perspective about the places that we saw when we were in France. So, Ariel, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about our Hot Springs Starseed Quest that's coming up?
I would love to. As you may remember, last October, we did our first Starseed Crystal Quest to the Hot Springs area. We assembled a soul group of 27 people, all having the rites of passage confirmed by star markings to participate in this crystal quest. We went and dug for crystals and had a lot of high strangeness, a wonderful unity instantly gelled between the members. And it was such a complete success that we are doing it again. This, and because we have so many people that were interested, we're doing two trips. In the first one is April 28th, and the second one starts May 12th. It's for 6 nights in the area. We'll be digging crystals. And if you have any resonance in your soul for crystals, if you have had a reading and you know that you've been told that you have the markings required to be eligible to join us, or if you have not had a reading but you still feel the call, send us an email at crystals, plural, crystals, at starseedhotline.com, and I'll be happy to run your charts and take a look to see if you do have the rites of passage to join us. We still have some spots open for both weeks, so we'll be happy to take a look and see if we can find you a spot. And I also would say that we will be staying at the incredibly wonderful Mountain Harbor Resort, which is a world-class resort with a very down-home kind of feel. It's not stuffy at all, but we just love the people there. It's a wonderful environment for this event, because all over the area, just walking down the street, you look down, there's just crystals lying on the ground, and it's on a beautiful lake named Lake Ouachita. So we are really excited about this trip, and we are excited to assemble two more soul groups to go. So that is the Starseed Crystal Quest. And since Annika is probably asleep by now because she's in France, she's not here to answer any questions. But if anyone has a comment or a question about the quest, just go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. And if no one has any questions or comments, then we will be saying goodnight here. So even though we do have a lot of people on the switchboard, I don't think anyone has a question. So, Lavendar, I'm going to wrap it up.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We're here every Tuesday at 7 Eastern Time. On behalf of everyone at Starseed Radio Academy and Starseed Hotline, we thank you for listening, and join us next week at the same time. So good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.